You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is casual Friday. August 19th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter, Chris Rosen, our weekly roundup of the news and song. Also, smoke some pot, lose your children. It seems to be the rule in New York State. Daryl Issa. Who knew this guy was a crook except for the police that arrested him back in the day? Russ Feingold makes an announcement. Immigration deal and more. But first, ladies and gentlemen, let us play Cliff Schechter's intro song so we could do this right.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
That's right. Cliff Schechter, are you there?
I'm here. That Jimmy Reefer cake is one talented dude.
Definitely.
I like the doggone at the end.
The doggone?
Yeah.
No, that's not doggone. That's dot com, dude.
Is it really?
Yeah. He's
he's giving out my info to people.
Yeah, he's trying to push Veritas LLC.
Or Libertas, or
Libertas,
whatever.
Libertas, sorry.
But you know what? It just
Veritas,
shows what...
Jesus, that's the that's James O'Keefe thing.
So first I turned myself away into a bit of a goofball, then you turned me into O'Keefe. Where I'm taking myself a few steps down on this show.
Wow, Jesus.
I promise everybody I am not a pimp.
There you go. I've seen you
right
in a pimp outfit. It's very you wear it well, though. I got to say that.
Well, there's no money in the left for being a pimp. Otherwise, I'd do it. So.
I understand. Tell me
we
about
need
it.
Funding. Where's Soros when you need him?
Exactly. That's what I've been asking for a long time. So, Cliff, let's get in. First off, you're in Ohio, and it seems that what was that show that he had? Kasich Country on Fox. Was that what it was?
I think it was called From the Heartland.
Oh, From the Heartland. There you go.
Something like that. He's got a lot of heart, that guy.
And just give us a little backstory. It seems that Kasich was obviously following the results of the recall elections in Wisconsin over the past 2 weeks. But just back it up. Tell us about SB5.
Yeah, so let's start off there. And, yeah, it is kind of hysterical to see Kasich whimper a bit now. You know, Kasich won by the barest of margins. Let's start with that. You know, I mean, it was an election where Ted Strickland was, you know, who was our incumbent governor. Kasich beat him, but he ran on very sort of wide themes. He didn't run as like a Tea Partying, you know, nut. At least he tried to hide that part of him a lot of the time. And then he came in and he passed a worse version of the union busting bill that was passed in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, I think, was the first one and got more of the press. And then, of course, there was that prank phone call where Walker took the call from the Koch, from David Koch, or one of the Koch brothers, one of those morons. And I think that got even more press. But the truth is, the bill here is actually even worse. SB 5, Senate Bill 5, not only takes away collective bargaining rights from all the public employees that in Wisconsin, the same ones as in Wisconsin, but also firefighters and police, which the Wisconsin one did not do. So he declared war on them. He also called a policeman who stopped him on the road one kind of time an idiot publicly, and that was a nice way to rub it in that he was doing that. So the police unions and firefighters unions now hate him here, and they're some of the few unions that sometimes support Republicans, often do. They hate him now, in addition to everybody else, and he's watched his approval rating just literally crash to the point where he's barely in the 30s. He may even be below that. I haven't seen the most recent one. And so he's reacted, seeing that and seeing in Wisconsin these two guys get recalled and everything going on there. We don't have that mechanism here, or he'd be in even more trouble. But we do have legislative elections coming up, obviously. A lot of things can happen. That's next year. And we do have on the ballot this year, more importantly, in November, we have SB 5 because we only needed about, and I don't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere around 200,000. It was less than that, 180,000 or so signatures. 1.3 million people signed this petition to get it on the ballot.
So wait a second, you need about 200,000 to put this on. This is basically a referendum on SB 5. You needed 200,000 signatures, and you got 1.3 million?
Yes, to give you an idea that people might be a little ticked off and not agree with that legislation, which of course they don't. All the polls show that it's very unpopular. So he's now getting scared. I mean, you combine all those factors, his terrible approval rating, what's just gone on in Wisconsin, the fact that this thing was put on the ballot by overwhelming numbers. Yeah, I mean, he's looking at the fact that he could be in some trouble. You know, certainly politically, he could get to a point, you know, especially if they threw out his majorities, which, you know, would be hard. They have a big majority in the state Senate, the state House not quite as much. But, you know, there's no doubt he's feeling a lot of pressure. So now he's starting to, like, sort of talk kumbaya stuff and say, you know, let's all just get along. And can't we just compromise? And I mean, he's trying to head off this force because he sees it coming for him.
So he invited the union leaders into the state house and said, let's compromise on this whole thing so that we don't have to do this referendum. Is that basically it? He's afraid of this election.
That's exactly right, because it's going to be a serious blow to him politically when this thing gets its butt kicked in November, which, it's going to motivate people to come out and vote. I'm not sure exactly what else is on the ballot, but any other measures of conservative versus liberal on the ballot, then you wouldn't want any of your to have your measure on the ballot this time.
Wait a second. So this is in November of 2011?
That is right. It's coming up, baby. And so, you know, I mean, that deal is a serious blow to him a year in. I mean, obviously, you and I, we know the way this stuff works. I mean, he may have majorities, but even if a couple of Republicans did not vote for SB 5, and a number of them, I think it was at least a half dozen in the House out of about a 50-member caucus, maybe more, and even a few in the state Senate, as I remember. So the truth is that, I mean, he could start losing people on a lot of votes. I mean, because the Republicans are going to feel more independent because they're looking at his approval rating, which is in the toilet, and then if he gets his butt kicked, you know the way, I mean, the dynamics, how those are changed if he loses, in a huge way. Uh-huh. To get scared. It's kind of fun to watch, quite frankly. Because
well, gosh, I hope it doesn't keep him from running for president in 2016.
I know, because, you know, he ran in 2000 for about a week and a half.
Oh, did he? I guess I forgot that.
It's easy to forget. It's much up there with the vaunted Arlen Specter run in 96 and probably a number of other week or two. Orrin Hatch, hey, he ran for president once too. Those ones that just kind of go thud immediately. Tim Pawlenty being the newest member of that club.
Yes.
and that was what happened with Kasich. It didn't, you know, he was the head of the budget, you know, committee, and he tried to take all the credit for the balanced budgets with Bill Clinton because of course it was all him, and so he thought that was going to be a presidential platform, and it turned out to be nothing, and no one paid any attention. So he just went and worked for Lehman Brothers for a while. Lehman Brothers, you've heard of them, right?
Oh yeah, vaguely. And
yeah,
so
they used to bring in money. Now so they cost people pensions.
Right, and I think they're still unwinding that. They have like a huge, like multiple floors where they're just guys in there just trying to figure out how to unwind that bankruptcy. Now let me ask you this: so. The union has rejected negotiating because they got 1.3 million signatures on a referendum. I wonder if that's got to be some close to a record. I mean, how many people do you have in Ohio?
That's what I mean. You know, I'm embarrassed to say I don't know the exact numbers. So I don't want to speculate and sound stupid. But I mean, it definitely has to be a record. And I think it is actually, because I'm pretty sure that I did read that. I had nothing come close to that before. So, you know, you got to feel a bit like the jackass that he is. Apparently, he much like Rick Perry, he bit off more than he can chew.
Well, that's, you know,
I don't know if that was the first time that
hello. We don't know that. I meant the corn dog,
buddy.
Now,
what are you talking about?
Well, listen, I don't want to spend too much time on Rick Perry because, you know, people can get election coverage 18 months out from the election, wherever we are, 14 months out, just about everywhere. But
I do want to say one quick thing, though, Sam. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, but I do want
to make up for my stupidity. Well, no, not on Rick Perry, but I felt like an idiot because I live in a state. I have lived here for 4 years and don't know I was going to guess the population was about 13 or 14 million. I would have been wrong. Population as of July, or at least as of July 2009, could have changed 11.5 million. So there you go. So 1.3 million of the 11.5 million people. I mean, 11.5 million. How many people of those are eligible voters? I mean, I'd like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean,
and so the signatures have to be registered voters, right?
Right. So the terms of the the percentage must be like through the roof. I mean, it's pretty funny. So there you go.
That's stunning. And this is in this attempt. How is it playing? I mean, before we just move to Perry for a second, how is it playing in Ohio, this sort of olive branch? I mean, because here's a guy who's been walking around sort of like puffing his chest out for a while, it seems like, and talking tough, and now he's backing down in some way and starting to show that he's afraid. Is this causing him more problems than
I think it is, because he made his bed. I think a lot of people would have said, particularly in the economic conditions that we were dealing with, you know, if the country is in recession, you know, in the post free trade outsourcing manufacturing age that we're in, if the country's in recession, places like Ohio tend to be closer to depression, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're losing jobs quite often, manufacturing jobs, even when things are going well. So, I mean, you know, when he came in and the things were in the condition they were in 2010, I think a lot of people would have said, if he'd extended an olive branch, would have worked with him and said, you know, and he won only by a couple points. And I think that would have been something where people would have reached out. Instead, again, he made statements about a cop being an idiot while he's busy trying to take away their collective bargaining rights. He made a bunch of other public statements calling people jerks and things like that. He, you know, he went into a meeting of people and said, get on the bus or the bus is going to roll right over you. I mean, this is the way he chose to conduct himself. And, you know, when that kind of thing happens and you suddenly come begging to people, there's a little bit of schadenfreude kicks in. I mean, you know, he may find some people that are willing to deal with him, but he's been such a partisan since the moment he got in that most of the people I know here, the way it's playing is, you know, good luck, pal.
Right. All right. Well, that's good to hear. Now, let's just talk about Rick Perry for one second. You know, there's a lot of talk that people are worried about Rick Perry being president and et cetera, et cetera. And I have to say that I think that, you know, there's a decent, far better decent chance that he has than he should, because I think the economy and President Obama's sort of failure to really sort of focus on jobs, I think, is going to leave him vulnerable. But I have to say that just in the past, like, 24 hours, you can see these massive liabilities that Rick Perry has. Like his – you mentioned, you know, he started to stuff the face with a popover when somebody asked him about Social Security being unconstitutional. And I've seen the video, and it's actually a mother basically getting her kid to ask. It was a brilliant thing to do. She got her kid to ask Rick Perry about how old the Earth is, do you believe in evolution, and why don't you have respect for science? And she's like, you could see her saying to the kid, like, ask him about this, ask him about that. and he has to answer because it's a kid. but he said, you know, how old is the Earth? And he says, it's really old. I don't know how old it is, but it's really old. And then they said, you know,
like,
what
how
about
many heroes? What thousands or millions?
No, yeah, exactly. And that's why you got to have a smart kid do this. And then, what do you believe? Do you believe in evolution? Well, we teach both in Texas, which turns out to be a lie. Evolution and that fantasy, whatever it is, the thing about the 6 days. And you know, he's clearly nervous about answering these questions. And, you know, he's only been in the race for 4 days. If these questions are already coming up, I think he's going to be in trouble.
I'm hoping you're right. I'm concerned about him because, you know, I've seen this movie before, and you know, they've perfected this thing. It started with Reagan, you know. Yeah, get the ranch in Santa Barbara and put on a cowboy hat and, you know, do your best Wyatt Earp. And you know, you're the, you know, and pander to the right and be a tough guy and, you know, make offhand comments about how you're going to bomb Russia and stuff like that. And then the next evolution of that, somebody who is a little bit crazier, a little bit dumber, a little bit more of an actual fundamentalist was Bush. You know, who used to take out chainsaws to cut like branches that I could break in half with my hands, and you know, and that was the next evolution of this, and now Perry is the further evolution, dumber, more fundamentalist, and that's the only reason I'm concerned is because again, this country.
That's certainly
shown,
the trajectory it seems like of the country.
Yeah, it's the trajectory of the country and the Republican Party. It seems like people, you know, especially during bad economic times, when people are concerned about things, they're willing to give a chance to people that otherwise they would, you know, they may be a little bit more scared of. And he's a good, you know, speaker. We just get up and speak. And then the right has created this whole right-wing pipeline where you can just, if he wants to, can do the Sarah Palin thing and pretty much spend most of his time talking to Fox and Rush and whatever and getting his message out to millions of people without having to actually go and sit for, you know, a really tough interviewer like, you know, Katie Couric or Oprah. So, I mean, I actually probably will do Oprah, but I'm just saying I agree with you. I mean, he's obviously well beyond the capacity of the few neurons firing in his head. But I'm still concerned that we've elected dumb fundamentalist cowboys before. In fact, they governed the country for almost half of the last generation.
The only thing that gives me hope in this instance is that because you have these two fundamentalists, and, you know, we should really call them what they are. They're dominionists. Because you have these two dominionists on the stage, and then you also throw in Santorum, who is, you know, sort of in his own way an equally religious nut job, and they're going to have to out-nut job each other for them to win the primary because, you know, I can't even remember who Bush ran against now in 2000, but it seems to me it was McCain was his biggest sort of thorn in his side. And McCain, you know, that battle was really they were fighting as to who would be more reasonable in some sense.
And yeah, well, I think in that race in 2000 when Bush got in, he moved to the right initially because they thought Steve Forbes was going to be the difficulty. And it turned out Steve Forbes is every bit as big of a dork as you would think he is by looking at his picture.
Right.
So even though he had gazillions of dollars, you know, he has the charisma of an old shoe.
I think it's even more bizarre than that. I think like literally 30 seconds of listening and watching Steve Forbes, and you would consider him the definitionally worst candidate possible.
Right. You actually, I think, feel an instinctive need to protect your children.
But Forbes,
if I saw him at the playground,
right?
You know, when my kids were there, I literally would scoop my kids up and put them in the car and leave. I mean, that's the vibe I get from Steve Forbes. So, you're right. And it ended up being a fight with McCain, who decided to take the moderate stance, which was just a stance, of course, and that changed things a little bit. But I do worry. I mean, Perry, you're right. You've got these dominionists in there. Romney's going to look like the moderate. The question is, though, will they vote for a Mormon? Because, you know, dominionists aren't cultists, but Mormons are.
Right. Of course. I mean, frankly, from my perspective, I would much rather, in a generic sense, I don't have much of a problem with Mormonism at all in a generic sense, for, you know, in terms of politics. A Dominionist.
I don't either. I actually like the magic underwear. I wish I could find some.
A Dominionist, on the other hand, and I don't know, you know, if there is an equivalent within the context of Judaism in this country, but and Mormonism doesn't preach this. Dominionists are literally theocrats. There is not a question of whether or not their theology is weird or this and that. Their agenda is to Christianize all of us. And so that is a lot scarier to me.
Yeah, I know you had Michelle Goldberg on, who knows this stuff very well. I listened to that. That was a great interview. And I, you know, I there are others, Sarah Posner, who's really into this stuff from, you know, she is an editor at Religion Dispatches and writes great stuff on this. And I try to read all of them to understand it better. But yeah, I mean, as my understanding goes, and I'm not an expert on this, but I mean, they're, you know, biblical law comes before the law of the United States, which, again, you know, in a context of a different time, that would be called treason because nothing's supposed to come before the Constitution.
Right.
So you could say, you know, it's amazing they could say how much they love the Constitution, but the Bible comes first. Well, no, that's not actually the way it works here, or you're a traitor.
Yeah, well, they have a different concept of what the Constitution is. But I want to move on to one or two other things here.
Sure.
I don't know if you saw this Rick Perlstein piece. I think it was in Time, the Swampland blog. He wrote it in response, in some respects, to a report from last week that President Obama is reading Nixonland, Rick Perlstein's book on sort of the development of the sort of the paranoid style of Republican politics. And
quickly, I love Rick. Rick's actually a friend. His writing is brilliant. You know, so my background's in history too, and he just gets it all right and better than almost anybody, really better than anybody. Whenever I read him, it's almost like opening a candy bar. Like, I just am so engrossed. He's such a terrific writer. So I'm upset. I have not seen that.
Well, let me just tell you, the gist of it essentially is that, Democrats win when they basically defend Social Security and Medicare, and they lose when they don't. I mean, he talks about, and when they talk about the rights of workers, and he sort of lays it out over the past 30 or 40 years. And, you know, we see President Obama starting to pivot. He's talking more about it. What's your sense? I mean, doesn't he have to actually, like, get a plan through? I mean, whether it's via the $400 billion, I think, that are still left in TARP at this point, which he could do unilaterally. Whether it's like he uses the fact that we own Fannie and Freddie now and really basically say we're going to put a moratorium on foreclosures and we're going to allow you, if your house is about to be foreclosed and we own your mortgage, you can rent it from us. I mean, there's a lot of things he can do. I mean, doesn't he have to do those things?
To win, yes.
Save the country, I think, to a certain extent.
Which is really a hell of a lot more important to the rest of us outside of the White House and his winning is what happens to the country. But, as we've said during successive weeks on this show, I've given up trying to understand them because I honestly think the people that advise him are some of the stupidest people. I really don't care if that offends them because I just don't. I mean, you know, we could have said the same thing. Doesn't he have to use the 14th Amendment and shouldn't he? To get the debt ceiling passed, yes. Doesn't he have to go when the new Congress convenes and go to the 59 senators that he had and say, you absolutely have to reform the filibuster and chuck it the way they could and so that we can get my agenda passed? Well, yes, you would, but he didn't. Wouldn't you have to go and when they won't allow Don Johnson and people, progressives, you know, that was the Office of Legal Counsel and others, they won't even allow people to have votes that are talented and necessary people in executive positions as well as judges and others. Wouldn't you just make recess appointments the way Bush did with that, you know, milk-mustached moron Bolton, you know, and others who were blocked? Well, yes. But, I mean, again, there's a million things. This is why when people on the left try to say, oh, it's all Congress, they drive me crazy, and I'll have that argument any day of the week. Because there's a ton of things Obama can do without Congress to get around Congress. Bush did it all the time, and in his war powers and civil liberties, too. And that's where you can tell where his priorities are because he doesn't use anything at his disposal. reconciliation to get the public option passed. Believe me, had he gone to those senators and said, "I'm the head of the party, I'll make sure you want to F with me, let's see how good your funding is for your next reelection."
Right.
He doesn't do any of that stuff. So, I mean, it's sort of like, should he have to do everything you're saying, Sam? Absolutely. But, I mean, I've given up trying to understand them. I don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't think they know what the hell they're doing. In the past week alone, they've offended, people, Midwesterners, by running around talking about free trade. Brilliant strategy there in the Midwest. They've offended Hispanic voters by talking about how they're going to nationalize this deportation program and up the number of deportations. They've even got Maxine Waters going to meetings and getting angry at them and saying to the African American community, let us go. Unleash us, and we'll start talking about how we really feel about Obama. I mean, who is this guy not pissing off that supported him? I don't know. And then, of course, I'm not even talking about what that New Mexico guy set out. Of course, him attacking people in the Netroots and progressive activists, that's an old thing by now. They do that constantly and show how dismissive and derisive they are. I don't get them. I don't understand them. I don't know what they're doing. And frankly, that's why Rick Perry scares me, because if we had a good candidate who acted like a Democrat, acted like a progressive, ran on their principles, fought for what they believed in, and did all that, I would think that even, they'd have a great chance against Rick Perry or whoever it was. But this guy we've got sitting right here doesn't seem to want to use anything at his disposal to try to win, and wants to insult all of the people that went out, knocked on doors, gave him money, and supported him last time. I'm at a loss. I mean, this is not from a personal position of anger. I'm not angry at Obama, except for the fact that it's hurting my country. I don't take personally things he says, because I really don't care. But I really do care about the country. I do care about there being a progressive policies and a Democratic president. And it's like he's killing that. And so I'm sorry, that was a really long answer to your question.
No, I think it's just so frustrating to see, for me, my frustration with his presidency ranges from both from a policy standpoint, but he also I seem to be the only person to remember where he was telling congressional leaders, "Hey, this isn't 94, I got this," he didn't got it, we were told from 2009 to 2010 that all these policy things, he's got to do this, but he's a political master. And it didn't work out that way.
How many times have we been told that? Trust, I've got it, the health care, we're fine. And they take the whole summer, let the Tea Party, the Tea Party grew during that summer. I mean, they've so monumentally screwed up everything that politically that I'm really supposed to trust them. And here's a little secret, and I'm sorry if this upsets them, because they think they're geniuses. But, they won the 2008 election by default. I mean, I'm not really sure how they, he's the first African-American president, and I'll give him credit on that, because there had to be a certain percentage of people that wouldn't vote for him just for that reason. Besides that, I'm not sure, they overcame that, I'm not sure really where they think, especially in the general election, you could argue primaries, they did some smart stuff with the caucuses. But in terms of their positioning and everything, John McCain was right there, this old doddering fool who had changed his positions on everything, who was running with the sort of straitjacket of a president with a 22% approval rating, an economy, an economy in tatters that when the Republicans had been basically in control the entire time.
A candidate who said the fundamentals of the economy are sound literally a week before the whole thing imploded.
Right. What is it in the genius that they think that they had there? The truth is they let the guy stay in the race, and he was in the race until that happened, because just like now, Obama and his people refused to attack him. Their worst attack would be, he's a war hero with some very bad ideas. That's an attack from them.
You got to write that article, because I'll tell you something. I was just reminded, I ran into Ari Berman at a Countdown last week. And Ari still owes me $200 from a bet I made with him in February of 2008. In February. This is just before Obama had even locked up the nomination. And I bet him 52-48 was what it was going to be. Obama beating McCain.
And by the way, I was joking about Ari. He's a good friend and a good guy. But
what's that?
Ahead.
No, I didn't hear the.
I called him a cheap bastard. No, I'm just kidding.
Total cheap bastard. Mother, he owes me $200. I need that money.
But wait, what was he saying?
He was saying. I just said, look, this is. There's no way any Republican's going to win. I mean, you know, it depends on which Republican it is, but this is over. And I said, you know, it looks like Obama's going to win the nomination and McCain's clearly it. And I'll bet you right now, 52-48. And he's like, that's nearly a landslide in today's.
You know what? I'm going to come up there. I'm going to come back to my old home, New York City. I'm going to hang and wait, you know, see the folks, whatever. Then I'm going to meet up with you. We're going to get dressed up in our best Clockwork Orange kind of outfits. We're going to hang outside the Nation headquarters, and we're just going to give Ari a beatdown.
Well, no. You missed my point, although I could use some help, and we'll kneecap this guy. But
Ari's a tough guy. Don't go messing with him all by yourself.
But it was that obvious. In other words, you know, like, that's the point, is that it was impressive that Obama beat Clinton in the primaries because she had so much money before he did.
That's true. I mean, as I say, I criticize them, but I like to give credit where due, as much as I think his political people are just unbelievably
stupid.
The
election of 2008, well, in terms of whichever Democrat it was more or less a foregone conclusion.
Yes.
I felt that either Clinton or Obama could win that election. I think the only difference I saw was it would be nice to see the Southern strategy die. Of course, it didn't. I was wrong about that. But you should write that piece.
I will say this quickly. As someone who worked in one of my first elections right out of college in 96 on the Clinton-Gore campaign, I worked at Penn & Schoen, the polling firm. And I will tell you that a lot of what happened, the reason Hillary Clinton – it doesn't mean the Obama people weren't smart. They were – on the caucuses and primaries, they mapped that out well and they were smart. But Mark Penn was so arrogant, he thought they were going to have the whole thing wrapped up by California. They didn't bother putting people in caucus states. I mean, it was as much his stupidity as it was their smart
definitely, maneuver. Definitely. You got a guy who is leaving his campaign, the presidential campaign, to go down to – what was it? To Colombia.
And negotiate free trade deals.
Negotiate free trade deals as another client. I mean, I'm sorry. If you don't have your campaign director or your chief strategist – when you are running for president, never mind the fact that she would have been the first woman president, never mind the fact that she had a lot of baggage she had to deal with because of her husband.
Right.
If you're running for president and your chief advisor, your campaign, the guy who's running your campaign has other clients, you've got a problem.
Other, especially ones that might like be a conflict of interest.
Yes,
in a serious
but I'm
way.
Sorry. I want the person who's running my campaign. That's your job for now. You have no other job. You're not moonlighting while you run my presidential campaign. That's like, you know, I'm performing surgery on you, but I got to wrap this up because I'm also, if you can imagine, I also work construction. And I'm going out to do that. And I'm going to take a break in between. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No, but, and that's the thing. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying that to take credit away again. They were smart, the Obama people, in the way they calculated that. So there you go. I already contradicted myself when I said I haven't seen them do anything smart. They did. They did that. And I bet if I looked throughout, just the way when I look at Obama's policy throughout, I can always find things to say good things about. Right. But overall, not good.
Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us. Folks, we'll be
always
right
a pleasure, Sam.
We'll be right back. Thank you again. We'll be right back with what is that guy's name? Chris Rosen. We'll be right back with Chris Rosen after these brief, message.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Analysts, taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Christopher Rosen of movielie.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
How did you get that job? Will you remind me again? How did you get that job? At...
just a lot of hard work and, you know, being very good at it, I guess.
Who do you know that works there?
I didn't know any. I didn't know anybody at the time. Now I know people. I just sent in my resume because I, you know, in my collected works.
Dude, what is wrong with your forehead?
Oh,
what did you have on your forehead?
I don't know. Cream.
You have a huge blotch of cream on your forehead.
You work from home. It's all right.
What is that? What's going on there? What is that?
Well, now it just looks even worse.
What do you? Is that makeup? What do you have on there?
I thought, you know, we're on TV. You got to have.
What?
This is not on TV.
No. This is not on TV. What do you? What do you do? Well, I mean, I can see you. This is the one people should know that I have Chris Rosen on. He.
It looks fine.
We Chris Rosen suggests. Streaming Netflix or Amazon on demand movies, generally not good ones. And I'm just saying that from experience. But Chris is the only person that during the course of the week that I interview. Will you not type during this?
We can hear you. You can hear me. No one else can.
And what? And we do this like through Skype. I can actually see what Chris Rosen is doing and what huge blotches of cream he puts on his forehead.
It's
dude,
figurine.
Don't type while you're doing this. We can hear it.
Okay.
Jesus.
So what's doing, Sam? I missed you last week.
Yeah. Where were you?
I had a meeting.
What do you mean a meeting?
You know, Movie Line is part of a company. They had a company meeting that at noon it was. So
what was the meeting about?
It was just like a state of the company type thing.
Yeah, I hope it was bad.
Why would you say that?
Just because it was...
Because we didn't like Who's the Caboose? We didn't write a review of it?
Well, that's one reason. There's other reasons. I mean, if this is a reflection of what goes on over there, if you're an indicative of it, what did they tell you?
They told us all kinds of great things. You know, I'm not going to tell you, you know, but it was nice. It was a nice meeting.
What do you mean? Why aren't you going to tell me?
Because I don't know what's public consumption and what's not. I mean, so it was a nice meeting. And then I couldn't do your show last week, but I heard I was very missed. I had such a lovely tweet, actually. You know, I'm going to use the computer for 1 second. Let me go find it.
You're going to have one tweet?
One tweet directed at me. It was a lovely one. Ray Paola, great name. Majority FM is a go. Cliff Schechter, Mark Maron on tape, and best of all, no 42-inch TV, which is me, folks. So that was good. Obviously, I was missed.
Well, they noticed. At least they noticed your absence. Now, do you remember what movie you had recommended 2 weeks ago? You don't.
No.
I don't remember. I don't remember what like DVD watch or anything, but I do remember he recommended Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I commended him on that recommendation last week.
Oh, but yeah, but that's not a movie that's on Netflix.
Also, I don't think I recommended that.
Oh, you definitely did.
Last week.
You definitely did.
2 weeks ago.
Oh, 2 weeks ago. All right. Oh,
between the two of you guys, you don't know what you're talking about. That's not. What did you recommend on Netflix? And I can't remember.
I don't know, honestly.
I tried to watch Dogtooth, but. Mila broke her arm. I don't know what happened. All sorts of different. And I know you didn't recommend Dogtooth. Now, let me ask you this. There is a movie.
Yes.
That you should be recommending this week based upon what's in the news. Now, I know you're not going to, because...
Well, actually, I was going to, but I don't know if it's the same one you're thinking of.
I haven't seen it. Oh, well, then it must be a good movie. If I was somebody who actually, like, was thoughtful in terms of my movie criticism or, like, you know, trying to tie things in, this would be the movie that I would recommend. But I know you won't. But let's see. What are your movie recommendations? Hold on for a second. If you actually do one that is... we'll see if you get the proper recommendation or give the proper recommendation this week. Go ahead.
It's a little hard to talk over the blaring music, but I was going to recommend...
Okay, hold on 1 second then. Go ahead.
I just have to yell. Okay. I was going to recommend Paradise. What are you, fucking Al Franken? We used to do this on Franken.
What? We used to play songs after people? All right, go ahead. Just go.
I was going to recommend Paradise Lost, the documentary about the West Memphis 3.
You were? Wow! Oh, my God!
But the only problem is...
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
The only problem is...
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
It's not really available. You can get it on Netflix, and I don't see it on Amazon for some reason.
If you can get it on Netflix?
You can't instant watch it on Netflix. You have to get it on Netflix, like an actual DVD.
Oh.
And on Amazon, it doesn't look like it's available individually to rent, but it could be.
Hmm.
I'm just looking
I have to say, I am horribly, horribly impressed that but I also know that it was the reference to that movie was included in every news story about it. So I know that you didn't know this off the top. Did you ever watch the movie? Did you ever see it?
I told you I've never seen it.
I know the story. Of course not. I definitely know the story. Well, yeah. But you never saw the movie.
Before the news story.
Do you know anything about the filmmakers?
Yeah, I mean, I know they made Blair Witch 2. That's true.
That's true. They did make Blair Witch 2. Do you know any of the documentary work they've done?
I know they did the three movies. I don't know other ones off the top of my head.
What three movies?
He said they
did three
Blair
Paradise Lost movies. Oh. There's a third one coming out like in September, so they're actually down there now.
My Brother's Keeper was their first documentary, and that was a great movie about upstate New York. Two old guys in upstate New York. Great movie. Oh. Have you ever seen that? How many documentaries have you ever watched?
I mean, a lot, I guess. I don't know.
Like two or, and I'm not talking electronic like press kits from movie junkets. I'm saying documentaries. Not things like, here's Brangelina, and they're walking down the red carpet. That's not a documentary. You know that, right?
I don't do that kind of coverage. But anyway, so Paradise Lost, the only problem is you probably can't find it.
Okay, great. That's
you
a
have
great
to order
review.
It.
Okay.
You have to order it on Netflix.
Okay.
You probably
All right.
get it by Monday.
Well, I've already seen it, and I think I may even have my own copy of it. But.
Well, I'm talking to all the people like Ray Paola out there, lovely Ray.
Okay, don't get so upset. People are just expressing their point of view. Let's, what's the other recommendation you have for us?
It was going to be Paul. It's out on demand, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. You cackling asshole over there is laughing, but it's kind
what
of
is
a clever
Paul?
Movie.
What is Paul? What is this movie?
It's a movie.
Yeah, no. I figured it
you
was.
You know who Simon Pegg is and Nick Frost?
No.
Okay, well.
The guys from Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
And Hot Fuzz, and they're very popular cult figures who you've never heard of.
I've never heard of.
If I was you, I would make fun of that, but I won't.
Greg Mottola directed.
He did Day
Trippers.
Day Trippers and Superbad and a lot of television work he did. And it's kind of a fun movie. It's a little dorky. I don't know if you're would you consider yourself a nerd?
A hip nerd. That's what I do. I'm a hip nerd.
But you don't like this is like real nerds, like nerds who go to Comic-Con.
Yeah, no, I'm a hip nerd. I don't.
You wouldn't go to Comic-Con.
I would, but, you know, only if somebody
dress up and go to Comic-Con. They dress like fucking Lord of the Rings characters.
Yes, I know. And you know what? If I ever knew anybody who I thought would do that, it would be you.
Oh, please. Give me a break.
You just that I buy. The idea that you're not creative enough. But if someone gave you an outfit.
Second of all, and you Lord of the Rings.
Well, whatever it is that you'd like.
Star Wars, on the other hand, you know,
right.
Boba Fett.
Of course.
Masks.
There's the idea that you were not like a little Ewok at the opening of whatever it was, you know, dressed like in a little. You like you look
what
like.
What was it? What was it? What would it have been that I was dressed like an Ewok when I was 5?
You would be dressed. I know what you would wear. You would wear like that, like the monk outfit with the little rope, and
maybe
you'd be walking around with a staff.
No, they had swords, lightsabers.
Whatever. All right, so it's
so
Paul.
It's you know what? It's fine. It's a funny movie, and I think it's good for home watch. It's like a good one that I wouldn't say if you were going to have to pay full price seat in the theater, I would say no. But a home watch, I think it's good.
Dude, why are you suggesting mediocre movies? Like, what is it? What is it that, like, you don't even spend any time doing this, do you? You just, like, you get a document that says DVDs
and
movies.
That's
no,
not
you
true.
Don't.
I spent
you don't
time.
Think about this at all.
I spent time.
You don't think
you
about movies
today,
at all.
You I am me today at 9:40. So I spent, you know.
What do you mean? You know you're doing this every Friday.
Oh, yeah. I know. That's right. I do know that. But good thing you I am me just to remind me. I think that's helpful. I think we should keep that system up.
Go put some cream on your head.
I have to, you know, wanted to make myself
go
look
put some cream
me.
On your head. We've got work to do here. Jesus.
Yes.
I don't know what kind of cream that was he had on his head. Like, why you want to make your forehead even shinier? Jesus. I'm not watching that movie. All right, let's play this week's Jimmy Reefer Cake song. And I got to say, I love the title of the song. Wait, what was it again? Surfer what?
It's Surf City.
Surf City. S-I-R-F.
S-E-R-F.
S-E-R-F. Oh, shoot. Okay, go ahead.
Surf City. Here we go. The economy is in a huge wipeout. But the lords of America got it figured out. Working their surfs to the bone. The tone. It's crazier than medieval times. When a surf gets sick or even dies, the boss has an insurance policy. When a surf dies, he collects, don't you see? Surf City. Send out their knights with tear gas and guns. Every surf around just scatters and runs.
Timely? I don't know. I'm not, you know, the drums need to pick up the pace a little bit, right?
It's a little bit, but I liked it.
I like that song. It has a real garage feel. And this week, the Screaming Majority. Where is my document here? Where I had it all printed out. No, that's not it. Let me pull this up because there was a whole crew of people this week for the Screaming Majority. Where the heck did that go? Bear with me, folks. Screaming Majority this week. All right, well, we'll play the song and then, oh, here it is. The name of the song is Corporations Are People. Very timely, of course. And it includes this week's song comes from the Screaming Majorette, Paula Carino. And it's a synth triacle. Here you go, folks. The Screaming Majority, and of course, I imagine the whole Screaming Majority crew, Daniel Killian, got into this as well. David Benjoya, let's hear it.
This message brought to you by People for Corporate Personhood, a thinking, feeling, limited liability partnership, just like you.
Now, first off, you have to know that if you're not in New York, New York Post had like a really not terribly clever, I guess it's just sort of like they must have some calculus. Like you can't put bad news about the stock market on unless you have, you know, something sexual. And so they had a cover about the volatility of the stock market where it was going up and down. And they were basically saying it was like a prostitute's pants going up and down. It was very weird cover. That's an awesome. I
really like that.
During the campaign, if Romney's still in it, that's the kind of thing you'd need to use. You need to like shoot like a need to put together some type of campaign video for Romney. Maybe Seth Romney will come back in some way. All right, folks, that is our. Well, the free show, the better half, is coming up next. On the better half, I'll be telling you that story about what's going on in New York State, apparently. If you caught with not even enough pot to get arrested for pot charges, they still will take your kid away. And then, of course, this story about the Republican running for Missouri's governorship. He's Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder. Even if you believe him, it took him 11 times to go to a strip club to find out that it was wrong. And I'm not anti-strip club. I just think that, like, you can basically figure it out the first time you go there. You get a sense of what's going on. We will talk about that. Russ Feingold's announcement. And, of course, in Britain, social media heads to the Prime Minister's office for a talking to. All on The Better Half coming up next. We'll be right back. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call us at 646-257-3920. We'll be right back. All right, folks. Welcome to the other half, the better half, some might say, where I reserve all the good goodness for members, the really good goodness, because you people who make this show possible, and I want to thank you, so thank you. And you can call me at 257-3920 if you're listening live, or you can IM me at Majority FM, as always. Let's start with this one, because this one's actually pretty funny. And we need a laugh, ladies and gentlemen. Peter Kinder. He is the Missouri Lieutenant Governor who... A couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was earlier this last week, a picture showed up with him sort of like in a bar next to a stripper. And she wasn't a stripper. I think at that time she's like not a full-on strip club. It's just a regular bar. But the woman said that this guy Kinder used to come in all the time at a strip club she worked at and harass her. Like, he was one of those clients who was a little bit scary. And last week, Kinder said, this woman's bizarre story is not true. And he said, but like most people, I'm not proud of every place I've been in. But her story is bizarre and untrue. It turns out, he's sort of backing off that. Apparently, her story wasn't so bizarre, and it wasn't untrue. What he did say is that Kinder did say that he first visited the Diamond Cabaret in Saugat. I don't know where this is. Somewhere in Missouri. After a baseball game in St. Louis when he was a state senator in the 1990s. You know how you go out, you see a ball game, you want to go to a strip club. And after that, he said, he returned about 10 times. And he said that he did see this woman who was a former penthouse model. And she did work there as a stripper. And then this guy says, and this is the best, I came to realize that this is not consistent with my upbringing. I'm a Christian. I was raised in a good family, and I thought, continuing down there is leading me down the wrong path. So it did this guy, by his own admission, and now... she's saying he was there a lot more than 10 times because she was getting worried. And I got news for you. Strippers want guys to come back and give them more money. If they start worrying about you, you got a real problem. And now he's saying that after the 11th time, I realized, wait a second. I'm a Christian. This is leading me down the wrong path, as opposed to probably a bouncer coming over and going like, hey, you don't come back here anymore. You're freaking the girls out. I don't care how much money you got. You're freaking the girls out. Get out. That's probably what happened. I love it. And, of course, State House Speaker Steve Tilley, who's looking to replace Kinder as lieutenant governor, was very supportive. If he chooses to run for governor, I think he'll have broad support amongst the party all over the state. Unbelievable. And, of course, look, you got strip clubs, that's fine. But maybe you should just get off your high horse, as it were. Russ Feingold announces today, I guess it was... today, that he is not going to run for the Senate In 2012, that seat's been vacated, you'll remember, when Herb Kohl sort of surprisingly decided to retire. Or, and this is really the important thing, because Senate was fairly obvious to me, he's not going to run for governor in 2012 in the event that there's a recall election with Scott Walker. Scott Walker's got to be sighing a big sigh of relief right now, because I think Feingold could have mopped the floor with this guy. Feingold told supporters of Progressive United PAC that today, and I think I made a statement on his website, after 28 continuous years as an elected official, I've found the past 8 months to be an opportunity to look at things from a different perspective. In other words, I don't have to work with those douchebags in Washington anymore. Corrupt bastards. And I'm finding that pleasant, not working with them. Excuse me. I had to turn the AC on. Let's go to the IMs, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to call the program, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, Big Ed Schiltz. John Stewart is dead to me. I can't believe there is a so-called liberal on television who's more arrogant than me. What happened with that?
I have no idea.
You have to explain. I don't know that one. Chastity Manning, back again. There you are, LOL. I was just about to sign off. I was waiting for you to come online. What's with the LOL stuff? What's so funny about that? That's what I'm going to ask her. What's so funny about that? Why do you laugh at your own jokes? I find that unattractive. Gbeard 215. I'm an entire week behind podcasts. Just heard Matt's announcement on the UK and the skinheads were the former working class. This is completely untrue. Skinheads were and are thugs, white racists, cowards, and roam around in packs. They used to be a National Front, morphing into the British National Party, and more lately the English Defense League. The EDF has recently been teaming up with teabaggers, as it happens. EDL, sorry, not EDF. One other thing, these were English riots, not UK riots. They did not take place in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Channel Isles, and so on. They only took place in England.
Oh, absolutely, there's skinheads in the EDL, but then there's non-racist skinheads and there's working-class skinheads. Just like my argument with chavs, they're now a trend to be a chav. It's not the original people who called themselves chavs weren't in this group. It's the same thing with, in America, thugs and gangsters. It was a thing from their neighborhood, and all of a sudden it's about bling-bling and no longer about police brutality. I mean, these subcultures get manipulated and changed through time as it becomes trendy.
What did you do? Go get your master's this weekend? What did you do? Get your master's?
Let me tell you, you have no idea. I listened back to those podcasts. You have no idea how... I know I sound stupid in my wording.
No, I'm just saying that. You just look like you had that, like, prepared.
It is incredibly hard to do my job and Evan's job while discuss the English riots.
That's now well. That I thought you did well.
Now that I'm over here, I sound even smarter.
Caught on video. Bank of America's drop dead to Rick Perry. We will help you out. I'm not sure I know that. Oh, dead drop. Wow. After a breakfast in Bedford, New Hampshire, an unknown gentleman approaches a casual Perry like an Ian Fleming character and proceeds to dead drop the following. Bank of America, we will help you out. And silently moves on. Wow. Here, play this.
Bank Bank of America. We will help you out.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. That is awesome. I'll play it again. We'll keep the sound up. Yeah. He's mulling around. It's a bunch of business people. Like, when I just explained it there, I thought, oh, some creepy guy came up and said something. No, there's a bunch of business guys walking around in suits at a party, and this guy just walks up, puts his arm behind Rick Perry, and just says this. You ready? Wow. Here's the volume. Wow.
Bank of America, we will help you out.
And he just walks by, just like, kind of comes up. I think he said, introduce himself. I think he said, like, you know, Bill, Bank of America, we'll help you out. Just boom.
Wow.
That was perfect.
Oh, man.
That's awesome. Latest in web tracking, stealthy super cookies. Websites such as MSN and Hulu have been tracking people's online activities using powerful methods that are almost impossible for computer users to detect. To show their appreciation for bailing them out, Bank of America firing 10,000 employees. Apple is now 75% of the market cap of Europe's entire banking index. Wow. Sam, last night after the market closed, the safest bank in the world asked the New York Fed for $200 million in emergency cash. Of course, the official Swiss bank denials of S&B Fed swallowed dollar swap line usage sends gold to new record. Yowza. Matthew, lawyer, much more concerned about Mitt as an opponent in the general election than Perry. Yes. Other Republicans from 2000 election, Liz Dole, Pat Buchanan, Lamar Alexander, Alan Keyes, Dan Quayle, Robert Smith. Man, no wonder why Bush won. Who the hell else was going to win that? Nefertiti. Morning, Sammy and Samettes. Oh, the Samettes.
I like that.
Thank God for my membership and podcast. Now just need the time to listen, but I love having the option. Kyle, maybe that goop on Chris Rosen's head is the source of his rage. I think when Chastity says LOL, it means squirting out loud. You might want to work on that one, buddy.
Yeah, more like shit out of luck.
Well, she's saying LOL.
I'm just saying what his was. That would be SOL.
Yes.
Which is used for shit out of luck.
Right.
Don't want to think about it.
Whoa, both you guys. In your interview with Frank Schaefer, he talked about Michelle Bachmann's response to the question of whether she submits to her husband. He said that she was clearly lying, that her followers understood that she must lie in order to get elected, and that her true agenda could only be revealed after she's elected. How is Obama's 08 campaign any less duplicitous? The only difference is that Obama's backers were and are too naive to see through his phony rhetoric. Says don't be a putz. Well, I don't know if it's any less duplicitous, but you've got it backwards. She sends out dog whistles to her electoral base, whereas Obama was simply implying that he was more progressive. Look, there was clues. There was clues with Obama. There was both. And, yes, his campaign was very different. I mean, I can come up with a list of things that he said that he has completely not followed through on, not just even specific policies, but, you know, his walking shoes, if unions' collective bargaining was threatened. He said for Social Security, raise the cap. Although, to be fair, he also said very early in Iowa that Social Security was in crisis, which was a serious right-wing talking point. He backed off that after Iowa, but he needed it to get elderly votes. The paradox there is that if you say Social Security is in crisis, and I'm aware of it, and I'll fix it, even though that's a lie, you actually attract votes from seniors. He did specifically say he wanted to draw down Iraq and beef up Afghanistan. I mean, that was his policy. People didn't want to believe. It's different. Yes, I do remember during the campaign when Goolsbee got in trouble for telling the Canadian press he had no intention of changing NAFTA. There you go. I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing with it. It's slightly different. The construct is different. Cool J 146 movie recommendations. Our brand is crisis. And have you seen the Yes Men movies? I've seen at least one of the Yes Men movies. Our brand is in crisis. Oh, yeah, and Paul. Highly unlikely I'll be doing that. Let me tell you this story about... this story is pretty devastating. It's coming out of New York State. Police found about 10 grams of pot, which, as my understanding, about a third of an ounce, which is about like this much in a bag, right? I don't know. I have no idea. When they searched Penelope Harris's apartment in the Bronx last year. Now, this amount, so small that it's not even a misdemeanor offense. And prosecutors declined to charge her. But Miss Harris, a mother of whose son and niece were home at the time when she was in custody, she was a mother. She had her son and her niece at her home, okay, while the cops took her away. They arrested her. They didn't end up charging her. The cops reported her arrest to the state child welfare hotline. The caseworkers came. They took the kids away. Her son spent more than a week in foster care. Her niece, who was 8 and living with her as a foster child, was placed in another home and not returned by the foster care agency for 1 year, over a year. She had to wage a year-long, over year-long, lengthy child neglect inquiry. She had no criminal record. She had never been investigated by the child welfare authorities. And so for 3 ounces of pot, 10 grams of pot, not 3 ounces, 10 grams of pot, she had her children taken away from her for a week and a year. She was never even convicted of it. Hundreds of New Yorkers, according to the New York Times, have been caught with small amounts of marijuana or simply admitted to using it, have become ensnared in child civil neglect cases in recent years. Though they didn't even face any criminal charges, this is according to a study of city records and defense lawyers. A small number of these parents in these cases have even lost custody of their children. This is for pot now. Lauren Shapiro, director of the Brooklyn Defense Family Defense Project, which defends most parents facing neglect charges in family court in Brooklyn, said that 90% of the cases alleging drug use where kids are attempted to be taken from their families, 90% where the child welfare agency does this because of drugs, 90% of them are pot. It's about pot exclusively. Shapiro says that this is not the same use of crack cocaine that there used to be. And so there's not the same use of crack cocaine as there used to be. So they are filling these cases. They are filing these cases instead. In other words, they are trying to meet some type of number where they have drug-related cases. And because there's not as much crack and heroin use amongst parents, apparently, they're making up for it with pot. It's stunning. This is ridiculous. And this woman, Ms. Harris, she was briefly held in custody in the Bronx, okay? Not even a day. She lost her kid for 10 days. She lost her, essentially her foster kid, who is her niece, for over a year. Police searched her apartment because they believed drugs were being sold there, an allegation she denied. She said the small bags of marijuana the police found belonged to her boyfriend and were for his personal use. She tested negative for drugs after she was released and then spent the next year trying to get her kid back. Unbelievable. They should just legalize the stuff. Cool J 146, movie recommendations. Our brand, okay, the poor performance of the Dems elected to Congress in 06 was evidence to me that I should not get my hopes up with Obama, so I did not. I don't know. I thought they did okay, actually, for what they were able. 1461, Chris Rosen's appearances have devolved into some kind of performance art just to fuck with you as much as possible. Optimal Tomatoes. Hey, Sam, non-shitty movie recommendation. Marjo. 1972, Oscar documentary following former Wonder Kid evangelical pastor Marjo Gortner, now grown up and taking cameras behind the scenes of the church and tent revival industry. Oh, interesting. It's available on YouTube. Okay. Will do. 767654. Hey, Sam, was just about to get offline. Want to chat about the social safety net? Actually, corporations are people. They're just better people than we are. 70198. On Wednesday, you talked about the parting of the Red Sea. The Jews never crossed the Red Sea because they weren't in modern-day Egypt. Ancient Egypt included a big chunk of the Levant. Jewish tribes probably did live there and might well have tried to relocate, but it's 100 miles north of the Red Sea. Of course, they probably didn't know it back then when the Bible was translated and compiled, so it's an easy mistake to make.
I always heard it was a mistranslation for something like a Reed Sea, or not a mistranslation, but a transliteration sort of thing.
Huh. Interesting. Well, unfortunately for you, 701, that is not what the scientists at Universal Studios told me when they took me and a group of other strangers in a boat and showed me exactly how the Red Sea parted. So, sorry. Sorry about that. And I'll tell you something. 40 years, it took them a long damn time to make it up to the land of milk and honey. Jesus. Excuse me, that comes later. Morella 622, I was on the Blue Roads radio blog mentioning your conversation yesterday with Chastity and saying that maybe it will come back to bite you if you decide to run for public office at some point in your life. And somebody responded, on the contrary, it might actually help you if you run as a Republican, maybe.
I think you've got other things that would hurt you more.
Like what?
Probably, not like personal problems, just,
This stuff, I mean, no, something like that, when joking around like that, I mean, it's all on tape, for God's sakes. We have it on video and on audio.
I had no idea that tens of thousands of people would have access to this. I had no idea. I didn't realize that.
No, I'm not terribly worried. I'm not a moralist, and so I don't think I've really done anything that it would disqualify me from office in any way.
I think it's interesting how we forget that that's the whole point, really. Like, when somebody does something like that, it's not that that's inherently makes them a bad leader. It's that they're just becoming,
I don't care if this guy's gone to strip clubs. Yeah. Are you kidding? I've been to strip clubs.
I just think that this guy from, you know, I'm a Christian. It was a non-Christian thing to do. Oh, give me a break. At what point did you figure that out? Right after the bouncer said, you're scaring the girls. Get out. Morella was joking. Ah. Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam, just finished season 3 of Battlestar Galactica. Any chance you could put it's in the frackin' ship on the soundboard? What's the it's in the frackin' ship? Oh.
Yeah, you can't explain that. It gives too much away.
I remember. That's when, what's-his-face says it, right?
Ty.
I'm not sure how I'd use that. Big Ed Schultz again. John Stewart rips Ed Schultz. Let's see.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh, for the Rick Perry clip. No. Chem Champion. Tuned in late. Did you cover the story about John Kasich, Ohio? Yeah, I did. Oh, yes. Did you cover the story about the Goldman Sachs VP changing his name and serving in Daryl Issa's office? No, I actually have that. I got a bunch of stuff on Issa, but let me do this one. So, Daryl Issa, who is the chair of the Government Oversight Committee in the House. And remember we heard, like, at the beginning of this year that ISA was gearing up for all sorts of hearings, was going to investigate the Obamas, and it never really panned out. And I think part of the problem is that Daryl Issa has too many skeletons in his own closet. This guy was arrested, I think, multiple times for car theft. Back in the day, back in the 70s, he was arrested for carrying an illegal concealed weapon. The guy's a two-bit crook. And there's going to be more and more stories that have come out. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Because he has a relationship with a company that is involved. I'll get to this next week. But for today, it's enough to know that last month, Daryl Issa wrote a letter to government regulators. And this is what they do. This is how they intimidate government regulators. Because if you don't do what Daryl Issa says, he's going to call you up onto the hill. And you're going to have to testify. And they're going to come after you. And your job is just going to be a nightmare of providing documents and all that. Not doing your job, just trying to sort of like get out from spurious accusations from Daryl Issa. So he writes this letter to government regulators and Ben Bernanke to complain about new regulations on financial firms. These non-transparent and possible inefficient rules. How are rules non-transparent? What does that mean? They're written down in the registry. What's non-transparent about these rules? Place our fragile economic recovery at risk while doing little to prevent a future financial crisis. So if you have rules that in any way curtail what financial institutions do, that's going to hurt our economy. I mean, these guys live in a bubble. Like 2008 never happened. It warned that the new rules, which Goldman Sachs, incidentally, has spent millions of dollars lobbying against, could harm the operations of firms such as Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. And coincidentally, Daryl Issa has a chief staff member, the senior aide to Daryl Issa, was a vice president of commodity compliance for Goldman Sachs. Just in two years ago. And so that nobody would figure it out, he changed his name after he left Goldman Sachs to become Daryl Issa's chief aide. First it was Peter Simone, and now it's Peter Haller.
Ooh. Hey, what happened?
I'll tell you what happened. This guy is still working for Goldman Sachs, except for he's just doing it right now with a different last name and for a different boss, and he'll be back in no short order, I can promise you, with a significant raise. You understand that for people on Wall Street, we talked to Taibbi about this, that working for the government is the functional equivalent of having a job and saying, like, hey, if I go get my master's, I come back and work here, I'm going to get a raise. For them, it's just like, I'm going to take 2 years off. I'll go work for a congressman. When I come back, I'm going to triple, quadruple my salary. Bingo. There's going to be more about Daryl Issa.
Breaking news, a judge in Arkansas has freed the three men of West Memphis 3.
Now, they don't have to admit guilt, do they?
They had to...
Wait, that's not what the story says, the New York Times story.
They had to plea.
Let's see. The deal being discussed would not technically result in a full exoneration. Some of the convictions would stand, though the men would not admit guilt. The deal comes 5 months before a scheduled hearing as to whether men should be granted a new trial in light of DNA evidence that surfaced the past few years. None of their DNA has been found in tests of evidence at the scene. The Arkansas Supreme Court ordered the new hearing in November, giving life to efforts to exonerate the three.
There's just not enough right now of information that what happened in the court.
Paradise Lost. Check out that movie if you can, folks. I would imagine HBO is going to rerun it, right? I mean, that would be pretty stupid for them not to. Wow. We got to put this video on the front page. Wow, jeez.
What is this?
Cops hit this woman with a nightstick in the face.
Where?
In Spain. Wow, they keep hitting them as they're trying to run away. Wow, and her boyfriend's like pulling her away because she's pissed. And now they're just hitting random people. And there's a guy with a video camera walking, you know, obviously shooting us. Wow, they just left that kid just crumpled in the corner.
Yeah, that's the guy with the camera who shot it up close. Not the camera guy you're watching.
Oh. Hey,
Wow. Crazy. Wow. Ugly. I have that. Let's see. New York Times, healthcare may underroll labor market. Yeah. Long doggy. Ed Schultz pulled a Breitbart on Rick Perry. Pretty sleazy. Apparently, John Stewart called him on it. The story I read says the three had a plea deal, guilty with time served, but they still maintain not guilty. Very bizarre. Courts and prosecutors almost never come out and say they were just wrong. Yeah, it's true. Tim Johnson. Matt is so right about the origins of skinheads. The original skinheads were non-racist fans of ska bands like Madness and doing the moon stomp and wearing Doc Martin boots. They eventually got co-opted by racists and, yes, National Front, but that's when that happened. Bands like Madness and Bad Manners publicly criticized them as shows causing fights between the racist and the non-racist factions, says Tim Johnson. There you go, Matt. Neoforms. Hey, Sam, oops, your friend in Stockton, I gave you my unused Twitter account under Embellish yesterday and three small purchases on Amazon. Hope that helps. Yes, of course, every little bit helps. Nothing hurts. If you're not making enough to sign up for an account, just send me an email. 11721.
Obama's kept more promises than any other president in my lifetime. I mean, that may be the case. I don't know. But the most important ones have been ones that he's backed off, in my opinion. Sam McCam has frozen and dropped out several times during the show today. I've gone back to the stream via iTunes. It's not usually like this.
Yeah, Ustream has been dropping it out due to server issues. I've been rebroadcasting as soon as possible every time, but yeah, it's been dropping out.
Okay. Sam C. Dorr. The next Chris Rosen recommendation, Justin Bieber. Never Say Never. Oh, yeah, that's the movie. God, thank God Miley hasn't really asked to see that. So last week I suggested Republican and Democratic parties were the best vehicles for delivering oligarchy to the elites. You went off on a rant about oligarchy. I wasn't actually talking about oligarchy so much as the inviability of both parties in our two-party system. That said, I do have some thoughts on the radical solutions you were talking about. Balkanize the United States, divide it up along cultural regional divides to allow for greater self-governance and accountability. This could be achieved by a movement rather than a revolution. I mean, look, I'm not necessarily against that, you know, sort of like in a theoretical sense. I mean, I don't have anything that jumps out. Although the wars that we probably end up having would probably be uncomfortable. I mean, don't you think that would ultimately lead to confrontation? I mean, don't you? I mean, how could it not? I mean, look at what's happening right now when we're theoretically all in the same basket. If you balkanize the country in that way, I think it's inevitable that we would have war. I really do. Harold, I was like the third member to donate my account. I finally donated my Facebook account too. Thank you. I think that Facebook account actually helps more. And you know, the thing is that on Facebook, you actually get some feedback and you can see what people think of it. And if people don't like your stuff, then you can stop donating it, you know. But everybody who is I've talked to, people say to me, we get emails like this all the time, that they get likes from our stuff. I don't know what that means, but I imagine it's positive.
Update on the West Memphis 3 courtroom.
Hold on for a second.
There we go. That's right.
Wait. Now.
Early word from those in the courthouse indicate that all three took an Alford plea, under which the accused do not admit guilt, but acknowledge that the prosecution may have sufficient evidence to convict.
More at 6.
Okay. Hey, Sam, I've been, I think they call that no low contester. I'm not sure exactly. Something like that. Hey, Sam, I've been working days this summer, so I've not been able to check in. Just want you to know I donated my Facebook account. Spay F! Thank you! Thanks for making my work days a little better while I scrub floors. Anything I can do to help. It does not involve physical labor right now. I'd be happy to do it. Abaddon, I went to a UK Comic-Con once, and there weren't many costumes, but it was boring. Talking to Gary Groth was fun, though. Jay Shivone, they had to plead no lo contendere. Yeah, that's what it is. Moishi Moishi, Dogtooth is all about the ending. Well, then, for God's sake, stop talking to me about it. More at 6, the Frizzies at 11. Right.
More at 6, fighting the Frizzies at 11.
Just a couple more. Bush and Change Firefox add-on to get rid of super cookies. All right. Nefer Kitty, Another movie recommendation, Mao's Last Dancer.
Okay.
Incidentally, I always lose these pieces of paper that I write this on. Now 7:24 to 7:16. Are we winning? Also, Kilkenny retweeted, Sam Cedar's octogenarian army moved ahead of Citizen Radio. Unacceptable. Now they're back ahead, 7:24 to 7:16. Oh, my God. You know, I wrote back, too. I put out the call. I said, everybody, get your walkers. Mobilize your walkers. Let's do this. People, got to get on this. You haven't talked to Chastity 11 times yet, so you're good for a while. She never responded today. Actually, it's a little sad. All right, folks, that is our program for today. Next week, we've got a great week planned for you. Dawn Peck, who's been writing some great stuff in The Atlantic about the middle class, plutocracy, the oligarchy. Going to do some stuff on education next week. I've been meaning to get Greg Mitchell on for his book about Hiroshima. Oh, gosh, tons of other stuff. Dahlia Lithwick maybe will join us. She's back from vacation. Got a 10-minute brief interview with Chris Hayes. Again, why not? He's great. Why wouldn't I? Maybe we should have Digby on, too. It's been a while for her. Hey, if you have any guest suggestions, please send them to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Majorityreporters@gmail.com. Oh, and guess what? We've actually started our website redesign. Very exciting. Look at that. Drooling. All right, folks. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday.